wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. Mix and match on the show today, but let's start with the news.
It's a morning edition also.
We're morning edition. Morning,
you know, and a morning edition. Those are ones where we have beer in the evenings. We're having coffee in the morning.
I have a nice cup of Guatemalan. Is this Guatemalan or Ethiopian? Sorry, I got my small coffee producing
local coffee shop, Sense of Place Cafe over First Street, Arlington. I recommend it highly.
So it's a coffee shop in terms of a cafe, and then you can also buy coffee.
Yeah,
so
yeah. They roast their own beans, and so they'll sell those beans at a relatively steep price, but they're quite good. But they'd have like a bar with pour overs. Like they have four little separate sections where they have like, it's almost like set up like a science setup where they'll pour over the coffee right there in front of you. There's a rule for like no laptops at that bar. You can bring a newspaper.
Really?
You can't just sit there.
Oh, so it's one of those coffee shops.
Yeah. It's kind of there. This one woman's running it all by herself. And, so it closes at 3 o'clock each day. I know a bunch of the, because there are dry cleaners there, and I go there for pizza, the same shopping center. So I know a bunch of the people who own the shops there.
Okay.
Or manage them. And they were saying, one of them was saying, she's got to hire on some people and be open, because people buy coffee after 3 o'clock. It's not just a morning thing.
They do, but they shouldn't.
Well,
it's going to be up all night.
Maybe she's just looking out for them.
Do they do food there?
Yeah, well.
Is the food good?
Pastries and stuff. They had done some more sandwichy type stuff, but I think they're. They're figuring out. They've only been open for about a month.
Because I'll say this. I don't want to go too far down this road, because this isn't the coffee show. We did do a coffee special once, I think 2 years ago, sometime during the summer. So go to 2016, look through the archives. You'll find our two-part coffee special. Because I'll rate my coffee places on the quality of the food, because I'm not so much. For example, I'll hammer Starbucks. I'm not a particular fan of Starbucks, but you know something? I'm not a particular fan of Starbucks coffee, but I really don't like Starbucks since they changed their food a couple of years ago, because the food is terrible.
I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's you and I are different. So anyway, we're having coffee. It's a morning show. It's also before the Super Bowl, because that will become relevant with one of our stories in the news.
Yep.
But we have some big news about ourselves.
Quick news item, technology-wise, accessibility-wise. So we are now a listed podcast in Google Play Music.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, Apple people, I sure have no idea what this is, although you can,
I do not.
You can put it on an Apple phone also.
Okay.
So Google Play has its own music access software. So you can do it on a desktop. It's principally designed to be an app on your phone or a tablet or something like that, where you have you download the Google Play Music app. Google Play covers all kinds of different things they offer, but it's Google Play Music. They offer, you know, an unlimited music thing. Also, they have one interesting feature where you can put a thing on your desktop computer related to Google Play, and any CDs you burn to your computer will automatically get uploaded to your account in the cloud.
Oh, wow.
And then you can put them on your phone. So if you're ever looking for a way, like you say, you got hundreds and hundreds of CDs, you can put them on your computer, and through this Google Play system, they'll end up on your phone.
Well,
a couple of steps together. But it's pretty useful, and I use that for a number of things. In fact, they'll even let you do it with.
Do you have to register, or can you just be surfed? Obviously, you have to register.
You have to have a Google account, but it's
very easy to find on Chrome and stuff if you use that as your search engine, which I do.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, you know, phone thing. But anyway,
we're trying to sound like I understand.
It has a segment, you know, it has a, you know, one of the tabs on the left, music, blah, blah, blah. One is podcasts. And so we put in the information so that now we're listed a podcast. So just like you can go to iTunes and you do our podcast, subscribe and download that way, it's a new way to do that. So I know some people on the Android phones, they'd have to find their own podcasting software. I use a Pocket Cast software for my thing. But now you could just do it through Google Play if you want to do it that way, and you don't have to add in a special piece just for podcasting.
Okay.
Seems to work pretty well. I've tried it out. Oh. So if you want to look for that, another method of accessing the podcast.
Well, you're
supposed to be working on the
Spotify.
I'm
supposed to work
version.
On the Spotify thing. We'll let you know when you get there, when I get there. But, you know, rather than blow it all in this show, it can be discussion
there
for another
go.
Show
there
when we get
go.
There. Yep. But the bottom line is, there's no excuse if you're out there for not being able to listen to us.
That's right.
Your only excuse is, I don't want to listen to you guys. That's a more legitimate excuse than what that is. That's a more legitimate
it's
excuse
directly
than,
confrontational.
I'd love to listen to you all, but I don't
what
know
we're
how
basically
to find
eliminating,
it. That's not an excuse.
What we're eliminating is all of the access. Like, you know, just like when somebody says, they're going to come to your party.
Yeah.
And they say they have something else to do. So, you know, we're eliminating all these versions where you can pawn off the reason you don't listen to us on something else. So
exactly.
Eventually you'll have to confront us about not listening.
Yeah, you'll just have to say, I don't like listening to you.
You know what I just realized? I had a dream last night where I was in an airport or nearby an airport. And there was somebody, I looked at a screen, she was on the phone and she was listening to the Atlantic Voice podcast.
There you go.
And so I went over half assuming that she would know you or something, because I didn't know who it was.
Charlize Theron.
I said, oh, you know, I just wanted to say, I happened to notice this. I wanted to say, you know, that's my podcast. And I was expecting her to be like, oh, I know Zeph from something or other, because so many of our people
Thank
know
you.
People. But it wasn't. It was just a real world fan. And I woke up feeling very good, as if we had like a population out there that was listening to us in airports.
I can tell you a very quick random story, which I wasn't planning to tell you based on it. So I had an experience this week for my regular job where I had to speak in front of some people, some students, college students. And there was a question and answer session, and one of the students had brightly looked me up on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yes. And the first thing he said was, oh, so on your LinkedIn account. And I'm like, I quickly cut him off, like, I don't really do LinkedIn. And he's like, yeah, but I see you do a lot of radio and podcasting. And I was like, yeah, there you go. And so it was kind of cool, because that's all I use all I really do on social media, including LinkedIn, which is not social media, it's professional social media,
right,
is basically promote the show. I don't have anything about what I actually do with my regular life. And I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. All right.
There wasn't a young man who was unshaven in your dream as well.
No, it's a woman.
Okay, because then we'd really been in some sort of thought projection area. ESP. All right, so let's get on with the news. One of the stories I noticed this week, and I find it only relevant, I noticed that the Spice Girls have announced that they are having they're reuniting. Now, there's two interesting things about the story. One, they're reuniting, but I saw in the headline, at least the headline on The Guardian, which is one of the places I get my news, that they're reuniting, but not to perform or record. And at that moment, I'm thinking, well, that's not really a reunion.
Yeah.
That's just hanging out together. The only reason this story was of interest to me is that if you go back and listen to this year's our Christmas special for 2017 into 2018, we actually talked about the Spice Girls.
90s Christmas or whatever.
Yeah. And so I'd like to think that the Spice Girls have seen a boost in their popularity because all kinds of people listened to us talk about them. And they thought, ooh, we need to cash in on that.
Well, if that's the case, they didn't really do a full job, because playing music is kind of...
Yeah, I did find it.
I gather, like, I think Jerry has said she wants to play music, but Beckham and one of the other women have always said, no, we're not doing that. Which I got to imagine means they're not
feeling
up to the task.
Probably.
I mean, I don't think they were ever like...
We had this conversation
it's not like
on
any
the
of them,
Christmas
well,
show,
actually,
though,
Jerry,
didn't
I guess, had some of us singing, but it's not like... Posh Spice ever sung again after she was out of the band. She didn't do solo albums, did she? Maybe she did. I don't know.
No, I don't think she did. It's interesting when I do think about their careers. Obviously, I don't want to get too deep down, because you can listen to our Christmas special to discuss the Spice Girls. Jerry, Ginger Spice has married Christian Horner, who's big time in Formula One, the motor racing series.
He works for Red Bull. They pointed out that she was working.
I can't imagine, you know, none of these people are hurting for cash.
Mm-hmm.
The two Mels, Sporty Spice and...
Baby.
Who's the other one?
Scary Spice.
Scary Spice. They both do TV work. Scary Spice is on TV here. She's a judge on America's Got Talent. And I think Sporty Spice has a similar gig back in the UK, but I don't know for certain.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Victoria Beckham is Victoria Beckham. It's like a career path of its own.
Yeah.
And then Baby Spice is the only one I don't hear much about. But again, I can't imagine any of them are actually hurting for cash.
Yeah.
And really... You don't need the money. Those that want to be in the limelight are already in the limelight. So, to a point, I don't have an issue with people going, what do I need to do this for?
Yeah, not play, but
just find that interesting.
But publicizing a reunion and we say we're going to get together. Isn't it? It has something to do with China, too, doesn't it?
I think, because
like,
they're
going to make some appearance in China.
Although people are saying, we don't want to play together. I want to sit there and go, well, you didn't learn to play the first time.
So that... The five members of the British girl band haven't accepted a £10 million each deal that might include television in China, a new talent show, second greatest compilation, greatest hits compilation, and endorsement deals.
And to be fair, how good are the second set of great? When you haven't made a record in 10 years or 15 years, you've already done your first greatest hits. What's not been covered that needs to go?
That's true.
This isn't like finding like these are the Beatles recordings from the 1964.
Or it's a band that's been playing for a bunch of years.
It's not that, and it's not the Grateful Dead. Hey, whatever, such and such. This is, I mean, basically, this is when they say it's the second greatest hits album. They're actually correct. But with the exception of one word, it should be, this is the second level greatest hits. Because if these hits were that great, they would have been on the first greatest hits all that time ago.
Yeah.
But again, I find it interesting. It's not a reunion. I saw the word reboot thrown around as well in an article, and I couldn't decide what that meant.
I mean, I guess maybe it's a reboot in the sense that they're not doing music. They're rebooting as a promotions company. You know, like, you know, if they're going to do talent shows,
social cause,
appearances,
a movement.
Like that,
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, God love the Spice Girls, but really.
All right, then.
So anyway, that's Spice Girls. And again, I'm going to take credit for that. And frankly, I might hit him with a lawsuit or something Like, hey, we're the ones who put you back in the public eye that I put you back in the public eye. But of course, there's no I in show. There's only a W for we.
Okay.
next door, you sent me an article, which I actually don't have the original article. It was from the Wall Street Journal. Can we shout out the journalists? Because I will shout them out, even though I'm now going to put the boot in.
Yeah, you don't have the...
I actually didn't know. I recorded the counter argument. It was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I think you sent to me later this week. I might have it on my phone. Yeah, I'm desperately trying to kill time to allow you a moment to have it pulled up on your computer. The gist of the article was the Wall Street Journal, because again, as I said at the top of the show, this is the day before the Super Bowl. So by the time you listen to this, the Super Bowl would have been and gone. Obviously, in the build up to the Super Bowl, everyone decides, who doesn't cover sports, everyone decides to do a sports-related story, specifically a Super Bowl story or an NFL story, and every publication show under the sun is doing something Super Bowl-related.
Right.
This is the Wall Street Journal.
Articles by Jared Diamond and Andrew Beaton, B-A-T-O-N.
So we will tweet them and we'll link the article because I'm going to put the boot into Jared and Andrew shortly.
Well, so adults, you know, the what do you call it, the subtitle? Title is saying polls. Polls show NFL is losing its core audience. Adults who report following the NFL closely have dropped 9% since 2014. Just 51% of men aged 18 to 49 say they follow the NFL closely, down from 75% 4 years ago. So what they're basically saying, you know...
ratings are down.
Well,
interest
no,
is down.
To be honest,
interest is down.
Right? You know, so I was thinking it was ratings too, but when you read it, it's really a poll talking about who says that what things they're following closely in their life, basically. And, you know, you're hearing a lot of stories. I mean, I don't know about among your friends, but certainly among my friends, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, people might say, yeah, I spent all Sunday watching the games. There's a lot more people who are saying, yeah, you know, I looked at the games. You know, people are interested, but they're not interested in the way they were before.
I definitely think there's truth. I definitely think there's truth to that. But in terms of this particular article, it then went on to basically take we don't do politics on this show, but obviously we're going to have to here because this is a position that's been espoused by the White House, that ratings are down, and basically this article attributes the lack of interest primarily to the concussion stuff, okay, which surrounds the NFL.
The taking a knee thing.
And the taking a knee thing.
Yeah.
Now, I happen to have an acquaintance would even be too strong. I've heard the editor of the Wall Street Journal, his name is Jerry Baker. I've heard him speak twice because my paths have crossed his in a very sort of perimeter-like fashion. He wouldn't know me from Adam, but I know who he is. Jerry Baker is the editor of the Wall Street Journal. He's been taking a lot of heat over the last year from the staff at the Wall Street Journal for not going hard enough at the White House. There was a lot of stuff about 8-9 months ago. There were a lot of fighting in the newsroom because they felt that from the top, the commands were giving Trump a bit of a free pass. Now, I get that because the Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch, and Rupert Murdoch is, I guess, politically behind Trump. Although,
yeah, my impression my impression is not that's not my impression looking at the Wall Street Journal. In fact, I maybe unless it's changed recently.
Yeah, but I'm in the middle of a conspiracy theory here, so yeah, please don't cut me off.
Okay.
So
don't interrupt me
now,
with your facts.
The Wall Street Journal is taking a position that it's for Trump. So therefore, I find it unsurprising that their one annual Let's Do Sports article is boiling it down to two talking points, one of which is legit and another one has been driven primarily by the current administration, the whole taking a knee thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that interesting. I didn't think much of it as an article anyway. So no offense, Jared and Andrew. I guarantee they probably had some hot item about the Hong Kong Stock Exchange that they wanted to run, and their editor said, don't do that, do something about sports.
Well, it's certainly not a long article.
It's not a long article.
I'm not sure why it required two people.
And to be fair, anyone who's into sports isn't getting their sports coverage from the Wall Street Journal. Now, I do want to say, so I've said my little thing about the politics of it, because I tend not to agree. I understand that there are people put off by this taking a knee thing, but the notion that somehow it is tied to the decline in interest in the NFL, I think, is a false argument. I will also say this.
I think everything's significant at the margin. Yeah, I just don't think it's that big a thing.
But I also think the concussion story is overplayed. Now, here's what I mean by that. I understand the story that the concussion story is scaring people from participating in football.
By the way, it's no longer a concussion story because what they figured out recently is it's not really concussions, it's the repetitive small hitting.
I understand the notion that maybe
CTE now.
That maybe participation in youth football is down because of the NFL. But the fact that the ratings, which is part of this notion of interest, the fact that the ratings are down isn't a story to me. And the reason I say is this, is that there's a great website that I go to. It's called Awful Announcing, www.awfulannouncing.com. And it's a website about sports media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always, you know, it's talking about announcers, it's talking about ratings, it's talking about shows. It's an interesting blog about the industry of sports media rather than about sports. If you go in there and just type into their search engine ratings down, pages of articles come up because it's always been a story they've been covering. And here's just the first headline: NFL conference championship ratings down from recent years, but still huge. Now, if you go through all these articles, you will find that loads of sports ratings are down.
Probably other than Premier League, probably everything.
Everything is down. No, there are some things at the margins, to take your phrase, that are up, some niche things. I actually think Premier League ratings have spiked.
That's more. That's what I'm saying.
Certain forms of motorsport, not NASCAR. Not Indy, not NASCAR. Formula One a little bit, but the endurance racing is up.
Yeah.
But golf is down. NBA is down. College basketball is down. College football is up. So there seems to be a trend in general that sports ratings are dropping, and I put that down not to the product, but to how we are consuming that product. And also, I think as a society, our attention span for watching sports is changing. Because we can get highlights and get stuff on our phone. Again, I don't sit down. I like the NFL, but I don't sit down and watch games. I watch the Red Zone because it jumps around and gives me everything. And I'll give up 3 hours doing that. But if you tell me to sit and watch one game for 3 hours, I'm not giving up that kind of time.
Yeah,
I can, you know. So I do think it's slightly bogus, this argument. I think if you look in the one article, on one of these articles, while NFL ratings are down, primetime NFL games are still like 9 of the 12 most watched shows over the course of a year. So I just find this whole constant discussion about ratings in the NFL are down, and then therefore people trying to attribute it to something, I'm like, it's a bogus argument. No one's saying that the Big Bang Theory's ratings are down because those guys are kneeling. Do you know what I mean? I just find it, it's kind of a silly non-story. I thought it was a non-story at the start, frankly. And I understand there are dudes in North Dakota going, I don't want to see these guys kneeling down and I ain't watching. But that's not why there's a 4% drop in ratings.
Well, first of all,
I just don't get it. And again, sorry, Andrew and Jared. Well, I'm really interested to read
Andrew
your thing
and Jared, I'm going to jump in and
about the tech IPO release
defend
that you're going
you here.
To.
Point one. It's actually not an article about ratings. It's an article about interest levels, right?
Yeah, which you actually cannot gauge.
Sure you can. You
ratings at least are something vaguely statistical.
Okay. That's point one.
Okay.
Point two, I'm not sure the point of the article is really these things are leading to it. I think the point of the article, it's a business article, is that NFL has to worry that if your core audience is diminishing, regardless of the cause, regardless of its comparativeness to NBA or anything like that, that's less money. That is less money that's coming into a league that has like runaway, really like economic stresses already, you know, in terms of how it's all running. And it's been very profligate in its cash flow, like, you know, and how much cash it's had over the past years. And so I think what the point of the article is, if you're a business, if this is the, if this is your business, you should be looking at this and going, I need to either reverse this or anticipate that my business is going to diminish. That over the time, that there's going to be less people who are going to watch the games. There's going to be less advertisements sold. There's certainly less people showing up in the stadium.
Yeah.
And it sort of should be a part of the wake-up call for the people who own these businesses that, sure, you bought this thing for, you know, $50 million 20 years ago, and now it's worth $1 billion, you know, this franchise that you now own. It may not be the case 20 years from now, because the, you know, these things may diminish. You know, I guess everything's going to go up in value in a sense, but like your returns are not quite as, and there's a lot of people who own football teams and sports teams who are garbage business people. They, and sometimes that's good, right? Like if you were just, hey, listen, if you got enough money and you buy a team and it's good for the community loves it. You know, there's so many people who want their owners to spend a bunch of money and basically lose money because of their love of the team, right? You know, go ahead and lose millions and millions of dollars a year because you love, you know, the local team that you're owning.
What's it Stan Kroenke says? Don't get into sports if, like, I'm in sports to make money or something.
Right,
and
right.
He's making a bag of it.
So I think that part is true. And like I said, it doesn't matter what it is relative to the other things. Even the rating, like even if it was about the ratings, that's fine. It doesn't matter.
No, it matters. I don't disagree with that.
What it tells you called it a short attention span. I think it's just the plethora of different options you have for things now. You know, there's a reason. I think the Premier League is advancing as much because of how it can be consumed as you know, what it is. Like, certainly more people are into it.
I agree with
it. There's a hipster element to it, things like
that.
I
agree with that.
But it comes in two-hour bites.
Yep.
It's in the morning, most of the games, or early afternoon. And so you can sit there and watch it while you read your newspaper and drink your cup of coffee or your kids are playing outside. You know, like, you haven't started your day. Whereas Sunday, watching a football game on a Sunday, the mid-afternoon games, they're taking 5 hours of your time, basically, to watch a game that half the time stinks. And that's what I hadn't thought about until you mentioned the short attention span and the red zone thing. Whenever you watch a game, right, there's always a point – early on in the game, it's a little bit bored, like NBA classically, like people watch the beginning because it's not, you're watching the game not for the sake of watching the whole game, but for the drama associated with seeing something contested live.
Yes.
That, like, you don't know how it's going to come. It's very funny when you think about it, like on a meta level, like, why do we care so much about the Canes? Well, we care just because
we don't know how it's going
to
turn out.
We're innately programmed to be like, I want to see how it comes out. So if you watch an NFL game, like tons of these games, by the second half, there's no reason to watch it anymore, right? Or they're just boring teams, and so you don't really care about the results. So you bounce around the red zone, and you find what's actually interesting. Whereas, like, other sports that have got a more – like, you've been big into the darts, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be like that. It's snacks, basically. Like, you know, a dart match itself can't be more than what, 20 minutes, half hour?
Oh, it depends. I mean, the World Championship final was nearly 2 hours.
The final, just, like, between two people?
Yeah.
Set of matches?
No, the final was, like, an hour and a half.
Do they have like 11? Do they have more rounds in the final?
Yeah, and they had extra sets and stuff. But we're going to discuss that on our esports show that we're going to do, and we discuss all these new sports. But to your point there, it's interesting. To your point that sports for TV companies, sports rights continue to go up. They may not jump up like they used to. I mean, Fox this week just dropped all kinds of money on Thursday Night Football because you're right, as a TV product. In terms of its relationship with the audience on that very base emotional level, live sports continues to be a valuable property regardless of the ratings because it is inherent. So as all these people say, it's you're buying drama where people don't know the outcome. Yeah. That's drama,
and they have to watch it live,
and they have to watch it live.
So are the commercials. And meanwhile, Red Zone doesn't have any commercials.
I just feel like our discussion right here about it has been so far more insightful than Andrew and Jared writing for the Wall Street Journal and going, interest is down. And then push into White House.
Fair enough. It was a small bite piece, but I want to defend
guys, I'm sure your stuff on the IPO tech offering was great. Go back to your editor and tell him you want to be reassigned.
Yep.
You don't want to cover sports. That's why you're working for Wall Street Journal, not ESPN.
What's our next topic? Because I'm going to need a we're going to need a break at some point because I realized I forgot to bring something to the room. So we could either it's the car related stuff. So
we can do car. We can do the Nutella story because actually
that was supposed to be next on our list anyway. So go with the Nutella. We'll need a brief pause maybe while we cleanse our palates and after the Nutella story.
Do you need to leave the basement studio completely?
Yeah, because I didn't bring my materials. They're upstairs.
All right, let me hit pause now and you can go and get your materials. All right, so we're rolling again. Can I actually point out that we could have just stopped it, not said anything, and just started again, and the listener wouldn't have known. But you had to make a big pronouncement how we're going to have to stop and pause. Now, in real time, when people listen to this, the pause was about half a millisecond.
Yeah.
We paused, and then we just started again, and listeners are going, what? What?
Well, that's why I thought about when we came back, we need to say we were back, because it wouldn't have made
sense. Oh, I've said that we're back.
Yeah.
But we were away for like half a second.
Yeah, no, all I thought about doing, but our listener. But I like to be honest
with listeners. The listeners.
I like to be honest.
I don't know.
About like...
If you're listening on Google Play...
we're a very transparent organization. There's no like secrets.
I think I'm definitely see-through. Lack of pith, I think. Is that a phrase? Lack of pith. If you're pithy, you have great depth. But obviously, if you have a lack of pith, then you don't.
I want to look up why that is, because pith is a piece of fruit, is a part of the fruit, right?
No, it's the pit.
No, pith. Pith is like pith. A part of.
You don't know the phrase pithy?
I do.
That was a pithy statement.
It's definitely correct. It's correct, but pith.
Oh, you're very fruity today.
Of.
Oh, that was a zinger. See, everything is citrus related.
Okay, so it's a soft or spongy tissue in plants or animals, in particular. And then the second meaning is the essence of something. So
there you go.
But it still doesn't pithy. Why would you be pithy? So like a
because you are essency.
See, I thought a pith in an orange was the white stuff underneath the skin.
No. A pith is when your buddy with a lisp needs to go to the bathroom. I need to take a pith. Dum. Sorry if you're one of our listeners with a lisp.
Anyway, maybe the two words are unrelated in their origins. Anyway.
Right, so we're back.
So we're going to talk about
Nutella. There was this interesting story the other week in France. They had Nutella riots. Uh-huh. Apparently, one of their supermarket chains, not Carrefour, which is that's the big French supermarket chain. I've actually been in them. Very nice. In northern France, lots of dairy and cured meats, which I'm a big fan of, and fresh baguettes. That one of their, I think it was International, I think is what they were called. Or international, if you're in France and you just don't want to sort of secede to how everyone else talks, they were selling their hazelnut chocolate spread Nutella at deeply discounted rates, basically about 65% off, and
Intermarché.
There you go, yeah. Intermarché, which is Intermarket.
So they dropped it at 70. They dropped 70%.
Sorry, 70%. Yeah, and caused
people know what Nutella is.
I just said it's the hazelnut and chocolate spread.
Yeah, but they don't, like the whole background of it, it's like a wartime thing.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if we've ever talked about this before, but it's basically during World War II when there's a shortage of cocoa chocolate, this Italian company mixed in hazelnuts because they were very plentiful there. It didn't ultimately become Nutella until like the 60s. It was called something else, and it was made into a spreadable version, et cetera, et cetera. So you see it all the time. It looks like a European jar.
It's very sweet.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. Like, they got in trouble in the United States by claiming having Nutella on your bread was part of a healthy breakfast. It's 58% sugar.
Oh.
Its second ingredient is palm oil, so it's like all saturated fat. And then, like, even the hazelnuts, and there's more hazelnuts than chocolate or cocoa. The hazelnuts are something like 10 or 12 or 15%
really?
Of the whole thing. So it's like...
It's good,
not,
though.
It's not like... Oh, yeah, it's very good.
And I've noticed it is now, like any of these things, I don't know who actually owns the distributor rights. I think that's the way to put it for Nutella here in the US. There's all kinds of like affiliated products. So you can buy Nutella and dipping sticks as one and all this sort of stuff. I do like it. And it was funny, on the back of this story, because I know we're going to circle back to this story, a couple of different places suddenly ran a whole different articles about different recipes to do with Nutella.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually goes beyond the standard. Obviously, it is a sweet treat, but I actually found a recipe for a chicken dish marinated in Nutella. And I'm reading it and I'm thinking, that sounds heinous.
Yeah.
But to the credit, and I wish I could find the article, to the credit of whoever had written the article, they said that the effect is similar to Mexican moles, which are a cocoa-based...
Right.
So, you know, you don't be put off by the fact that it is a sweet thing. Because at first I'm thinking, ooh, chicken and Nutella. I can't think of anything more disgusting than that.
It's also sugar-coating it. I mean, sort of like like an Asian, like cheap Chinese food.
But I had never thought of Nutella to do anything with it other...
Put it on a piece of bread.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the, we had looked at this article when it first came out, or little bits talking about the riots, and haha, it's funny, right? You can find video online of people climbing over each other to get their Nutella at 70% discount. What I thought was funny is when I went to look it up again today, there's sort of a second wave of articles because then the French government decided they need to step in.
Oh, yeah.
In a very French way, they said, apparently there are already a bunch of rules in France about discounting food or other products too deeply, but they basically said we need to step in and prohibit companies from discounting food this deeply because of the hazard to all of our health if we all get into riots going after food. And my thinking is maybe we don't even need to do anything. Maybe these riots aren't even really, like, I don't think anybody killed it's not like a full-blown riot. People didn't break into the stores. They just climbed over each other to get to the Nutella.
It's true, isn't it? It's a bit like Black Friday back in the day when everyone used to hang out outside their big box store to attempt to buy TVs and stuff. And it was like, there's a fine line between a rush, a melee, and a riot.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending how you want to use your words, perhaps the Wall Street Journal guys, Andrew and Jared, could look into misuse of the words melee, riot, and crush.
In classic French style, like, so specific. France's Minister of Agriculture and Food, Stéphane Tavert, said the government should limit discounts to 34% of the price retailers pay for the goods. That, along with the elimination of buy one, get one free promotion, should ostensibly prevent people from rioting. Anyway, like, literally, somebody did some analysis, 34%. See, if we go, 35%, dangerous riots. 33%, cool, no problem, don't worry about it.
I'm just surprised, how were Intermarché able to price it at 70% off? Isn't the standard for wholesale and retail like 0.6, and then I'm just shocked.
Another blurb here and stuff.
They must have been trying to get rid of it.
Well, no, it's a loss. I mean, the idea is you sell that stuff at a loss and everybody's in the store.
Yeah.
You know, once they have a riot, they have to go over to the Band-Aid section and buy some gauze pens, things like that to take care of themselves. But that's the idea. So I'm sure they're losing money on it each time.
Yeah, I guess there's no story about the fact that baguettes were selling for triple their price.
Before I read the articles, I was wondering whether Nutella had a stock that was running out. And therefore they were trying to sell it before it expired or something like that. So anyway, now we are segueing over classic lack of preparation. So Zef decided, although it's a completely different product, that we should have a spread, and took this opportunity to get some Marmite. For people who don't know what Marmite is.
Actually, to be fair, to use up some Marmite that's been left over.
How old is that?
The expiration date on it. The expiration date on it is August of 2018, so it's not bad. Now, again, Nutella, and I found it interesting when you did your research there that Nutella actually was of Italian origin.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem to be something that's now, I affiliate it with sort of France and Northern European.
I always think of it as like a Dutch thing or something. I think it's something about the font.
I was just about to
that's
say.
That's on the jar sort of that looks very.
Yeah. Northern European.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it. But anyway, Marmite. Because in Britain, I don't know the history of Marmite, but if Nutella came out of sort of war rationing, well, in Britain, there was no sugar at all.
Yeah.
And so you use Marmite is a yeast-based spread,
right.
Very similar to the famous Australian Vegemite. Although Vegemite and Marmite are similar. I've actually had Vegemite. I don't like Vegemite as much as Marmite. Maybe that's just because what I was brought up on. Now, I actually like Marmite.
I feel like we've...
Unlike Nutella that you have to heap loads on.
Marmite yeast extract. I'm looking it up on the internet.
I would actually counsel anyone against...
Marmite from yeast extract, a byproduct of beer brewing.
Get stuck into that.
By the way, this bread might be a little bit freezer burned, but... Oh, no.
Oh, you don't like that?
No.
Oh, Marmite's great. I love it. I've been looking forward to this show for weeks now to come in and just eat Marmite.
What does that taste like? It tastes like, yeast...
Very tangy.
Oh, tangy. Tangy in
really
like
bites the top of your mouth.
Yeah, right. Like tangy in a chemical way.
And here's what I'll do for you. It contains B vitamins and apparently is very good for you.
No. Yeah, I'm sure it's good because it has no, it doesn't have any sugar in it in there for sure, right? There's nothing. Is there anything added? What's the ingredient list?
I can't read the writing.
I can read it. I have
no. I have better eyes. Yeast extract, salt, carrot and onion extracts, spice extracts, enriched with nicotinamide.
Extremely salty.
And then
salty.
In brackets, it looks like Nazi, but I know it's not that. And then some other chemicals.
It's very salty.
Very good for you.
Other similar products include Australian Vegemite, the Swiss Cenovis, C-E-N-O-V-I-S.
See, that doesn't sound alluring.
Vitamin R.
Ooh, that doesn't. That sounds very German.
Vitamin R. Sticky, dark brown food paste with a distinctive powerful flavor, which is extremely salty.
It is one of those things, because it's that sort of nice deep brown, you know, we've just been talking about Nutella and Mole's and stuff like that. It looks like it should taste good. But you're in for a shock if people don't tell you in advance what it is.
Yeah. Well, as a spread, you expect, it don't have to be sweet, but at least it's like peanut butter level sweet, you know?
No, it's a savory spread.
I know. But actually, who wants that? I mean, very clearly, I mean, this is one of those things where 100% you like it because of a connotation from your youth of having it. And
probably.
There. Yeah. Hot I mean, it's toast. Not like, you know, you learned into liking that. Nobody the first time they picked it up was like, excellent.
I will say this about Marmite.
I mean, like, you're going back for more. You can eat this whole loaf of bread.
I would say this about Marmite, though. You can. I mean, I challenge anyone out there to actually search on the internet. I do not think there's ever been a riot over Marmite or Vegemite or the German vitamins.
That's what Wikipedia says about the manufacturer. While the process is a secret, the general method for making yeast extract on a commercial scale is to add salt to a suspension of yeast, making the solution hypertonic, which leads to the cells shriveling up. This triggers autolysis, in which the yeast self-destructs. The dying yeast cells are then heated to complete their breakdown, and since yeast cells have thick cell walls which would detract from the smoothness of the end product, the husks are sieved out.
You like your beer.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
The fact that it's a byproduct of beer is not too surprising.
Well, right? But what I'm saying is, if you have a bit of Marmite on toast with a beer, the things really go well together.
It's the one thing I would say like nuts and beer. One thing I think if you put it on like
chips, obviously it's the salty nature of it.
I think if you put it on something different, it might work a little better. We're just putting on a piece of regular bread and it's not even toasted.
Excellent. Really enjoyed that. So again, no one in Britain is rioting over Marmite, whatever the price.
I imagine it's not terribly expensive.
But I do feel like a one-on-one face-off. The fact that Marmite has no sugar and is better for you beats Nutella hands down.
Does the back label have what this Wikipedia thinks? No. So the back label on Wikipedia says it has a poem: roses are red, violets are blue, Marmite you're brown, and I love you.
There you go. So anyway, that's Marmite.
All right.
Forget Nutella. Marmite's your man.
All right.
All right, back into the show. You bought a new car recently.
I did. Well, we're going to talk car show or car.
I think why don't we just sort of tie the two things together?
Yeah, sure.
But we'll set it up because, again, the Atlantic Voice went to the Washington Auto Show the other week. We didn't record as we'd originally planned, but we have brought back our thoughts. But we did it all. I think maybe I'll say it this way. This is the first time in previous years, one or either one of us, when we've gone to the car show and we've been in the market for a car, this year, we both had cars.
Yeah.
And so
your car's
2 years old now. Year and a half.
Yeah, I mean,
I felt, and you've just taken delivery of a car.
Most people are acquainted with it when we had to stop a podcast in the middle for the fact
that the alarm,
was going off.
Yeah. And you've just taken delivery of your new car. So I want to say that our visit to the auto show this year, we're as neutral as judges as you're going to be.
It kind of took a little bit away from it because, you know, you'd sit in a car for 2 seconds and you're like, well, you know, sure, it's cool. I don't care that much. I wasn't investigating anything, so I didn't really dig in. I was thinking to myself, I don't think we even like barely breezed by Mercedes. I remember
I don't remember seeing where they
exactly,
were.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't know if we missed it or what happened, but the interesting thing with the car show over the years is, you know, we've gone for quite a few years now, probably 10 years, right? The upstairs is in the convention center in Washington. It's got two
level
floors. And the upstairs used to be 100% American cars, right? And then the downstairs was all the foreign cars. And it was a very clear divide, your classic Chevys, all the upstairs and downstairs was everything else. Then somewhere along the line, Toyota moved upstairs.
Yeah.
And now, because of the ownership's all mixed, we got all kinds of conglomerations like the Chrysler Dodges are next to the
Daimler. They're all upstairs.
Like they're all mixed there. There's a couple of Alphas right over there, and then Trying to think if there's American stuff downstairs.
Yeah, Lincoln would down. Lincoln would downstairs.
So all kind of jumbling everything up. But, you know, it was good as ever. Well, the other thing we went, usually we go when it first opens. And so there's almost nobody there, which makes it a lot easier to deal with. And this one we went before going to see your friend's band.
Yep.
At
quick shout out to Kentucky Avenue.
Down at the wharf.
Internet them if you're interested in them.
So we were there before. So the place is full, like when we got there, because it was like a late afternoon and everybody was there.
Yeah.
Not that it really impeded things, but it was didn't feel like you had the place to yourself.
No.
Anyway, I don't know. Anything else about anything jump out at you about the car show?
What jumped out about me was how the Washington car show has never been about, I forget what you call them now. What do you call the cars they put out there that don't have any interiors? They're sort of ideas for the future. Concept cars. The Washington Auto Show has never been about sort of the future or where the industry might be going. It's always about this is what you can buy now. Yeah. I didn't feel, and I might be wrong when I say this, because again, when you go to these things and they're so large and there's so many different manufacturers and you come in with sort of you're preconditioned as to what you want to see. I didn't feel this year that there were a couple of car manufacturers that were hyping up their alternative technologies, but I didn't feel like that's what it was all about this year, where everyone was doing it to compete with each other. Like I would never have known. Obviously,
we saw that hydrogen fuel cell car.
Yeah, I mean, especially upstairs with the domestics and Toyota, there seemed to be a greater sense of we're doing this, we're going to be doing that.
You know what? Well,
But when we went downstairs, when we went to Volvo, you had to remind me, oh, they're getting out of the combustion engine industry altogether. And yet, when you went to their display, I would have imagined that news might have been, 2 years ago, it would have been more promoted that we'd go in this direction. And I found that an interesting sort of change in position this year.
So the story, when DC didn't always have a car show, my recollection when they brought it in was part of the reason they were coming to Washington was now political. That, you know, that everybody's got to have a relationship with the government. And obviously it's not like the show itself, but all the people associated with the show and representatives, it was an excuse to come here, maybe go visit congressmen and on the Hill and the like.
Do a bit of lobbying.
So I just hadn't thought about this till now, but the alternative fuels and things like that would have been a lot bigger under prior administrations. So maybe, I mean, at some degree were they like, we don't really need to tout that thing so much anymore because now the new folks running things could care less whether
it was interesting. And again, I don't want to go here too much. It was interesting that Toyota, they have a large section. Like they're in there going, we're a big player, like Ford are a big player, like Chevy are a big player in terms of volume. Whereas Honda are not in that. They don't put out that same sort of image. Yeah. Toyota had promoted how they're one of the sponsors of the U.S. Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. So there was a lot. There was a lot of stuff there.
Things where you could take pictures in front of a green screen and put you on a mountain.
It was interesting how Toyota and a couple of other foreign companies had put out there up front and center that they were building in the U.S., which I thought was quite interesting to your point.
Yeah, I think they've classically done that. But I think that's why Toyota got big, because I think Toyota has a lot more manufacturing in the States.
But I found it interesting to go down, you know, downstairs, which is, you know, the far sort of out of all the imports. I can't remember if it was either Hyundai or Subaru had also had it out there. Yeah, we're, you know, from our brand new factory in Mississippi type thing. It was interesting that because the Washington area DC Auto Show, DC area Auto Show does have that sort of political underpinning to its existence. Because again, I don't know. Maybe it is a factor to some people where their car is built. To me, I'm like, I always take the point I understand. Everyone is like, I'm buying domestic, or I'm never buying an American car. I'm always buying a foreign car. But that's slightly different from where it's built. Do you see what I'm saying?
No. I mean, I think, this is obviously not a lot of people, but there might be people who are like, I could take you a Toyota Camry or a Honda Accord. I don't really care very much. But, you know, those Camrys are made in Ohio. I don't know if that's where they're made, but they're made in Ohio. So why not, you know, knock a little bit over
there? I didn't know I don't know. I mean, it's never – I always felt for some people they don't go that deep in the argument. They're either buying domestic or they're buying a foreign brand.
Yeah, at that moment, that was classic, but I think that's less so. And the problem is, you know, if – it could become an excuse. Like, I'd like, you know, in years gone by, you might have been like, oh, I don't want to buy a Toyota, you know, because it's foreign. But maybe now at this point, there's a certain number of people go like, well, yeah, sure, it's a foreign brand, but it's American jobs that it's supporting.
Okay. I'll give you that.
So that was the car show. That so meanwhile, show. I had taken delivery of an Audi sports sedan S4 for
a German car. Do you know where it's manufactured?
Germany.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, 100% sure.
Okay, because my German whole car, thing. So
that's the thing. I ordered the car, and I hadn't had a car before. I haven't had a new car in my life. My third new car in my life.
Yeah, so am
but,
I.
Put in, like, I decide all the configuration I want. You were involved in the process of trying different cars out. And
very
like, and then I spent a lot of time trying to figure out which we're going to go into the various options here in a second and how confusing it is. But the when I put the order in, I was thinking every other time, they may not have had the car on site, but they'd be like, okay, boop, boop, punch it into a computer. Yeah, yeah, we can, there's one of those cars and wherever, we'll have it sent over here in a week or something. Instead, I do all this stuff, and they're like, okay, well, it's 60 to 90 days before your car will be here. I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah, they, you know, we put the order in. They start building the car to those specifications on the factory line.
Bespoke.
Kind of, yeah. So like, at that time, I think it was the end of November, they're like, well, it says that slated starting time, I think it was the end of November, maybe mid-November, something like that. They slated manufacture time was basically the very end of December, January. And so I was going to get an email from my representative, my sales guy, saying, hey, you know, it's on the line now. And then they would know more definitively when it was going to show up at our door. Instead, on like New Year's Day, or yeah, it was New Year's Day, they called up and they're like, the guy's like, I had to check twice to figure this out, but it's here. Like, so somewhere along the line, whether they just are bad at flow of information. Now, I know, like you told me, for the BMWs, they literally, like, you can track the thing as it's floating across the ocean. Yeah. Like, there's specific thing. So it may be that Audi just doesn't spend that much time, like, tracking that information. Or it could be, of course, that they had a car that was half built on the line, or, like, they were already building, and it was like, oh, this is what he wants, and so we'll give him that car. So anyway, it's here, and I took delivery not quite a month ago, a little less than a month ago. In fact, I got to go pick up the permanent tags on it because the temp tags are expiring. And great car. I mean, it's an awesome car. You know, it's got all the doodads in there. But, like, driving-wise, it's fantastic. It's certainly the best car I've had that I can drive around and enjoy driving it. Interior is just superbly configured. Like, so, you know, there's a lot of talk, and we're going to talk about it like this. I mean, it's nice looking, but also I had not even really registered as much of this. You know, there's a lot of talk about these cars, about the ergonomics.
Are
the switches where you want them to be? And everything in this thing is, like, great that way. Like, there's a little central dial that controls all the various systems. It has a little on the dial is, let's say it's, you know, it's like 2 inches across, a round thing, but it's a touch thing on it, so you can spell letters on top
of
your finger to, like, write in the GPS or whatever it is. The way they have the switches, it's kind of weird. There's a couple of switches right in front of that thing, but, like, literally you can control everything with your wrist resting on the gear shift knob, which is, like, extra wide,
I think
specifically for the purpose. So it's like almost like computing the thing with one hand. They don't have it has a screen in the middle of the dashboard, and we'll talk about another screen in a second, like a regular GPS screen, but it's not a touch screen. And that's a conscious effort of, like, they don't want you leaning over and touching the touch screen. And I think that's right. I hate touch screens in cars to begin with.
It shouldn't be that.
You know, I looked at the Infiniti. The Infiniti is all touch screen. I'm like, what do I want that for? Like, you know, if you can't grab something or move it around, it's not good for driving purposes.
Well, this is the thing too. I mean, and to your point, I think Tesla, basically everything is just an iPad screen. Like, everything exists.
Right, right. I toyed with that new 3 that was coming out. I said, oh, maybe I'll wait and see what that is. But it literally has nothing.
They ain't building those. If you put money down, you ain't
taking delivery now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
When did they put their money down? 3 years ago? He's a criminal, that. I've said this before. He's a criminal, that one, isn't he? He's like Ori.
He's not even allegedly.
He's Ori Goldfinger.
Yeah. Realize we're a
James Bond versus Elon Musk.
I know
who I'm rating.
We're on all these things now. Somebody's going to comb it and, like, going to check and stuff, and they're going to sue us for defamation.
Libel, he's got enough problems slander, with what's whatever his name, right, the blonde getting divorced from him again.
Anyways, so like all that setup. Now, I got, like, all the technology things add on. First of all, it comes with a bunch of them. Yeah. But I went ahead and I said, you know what?
You know me.
I love the gadgets. So I had a big debate about like whether to get the dynamic steering, which is like the steering. There's all these cars now like steer by wire, meaning like your steering wheel is not connected. Well, not all of them, but many of them are now steer by wire, meaning that catch a rack.
Yes.
Your steering wheel is electronic creating steering. Electronic input that's controlling another electronic component.
Well, so the dynamic steering,
for example, changes the ratios depending upon where you do. So if you're driving through a parking lot, I can just like half turn the wheel and I can make a quick turn around or something like that based on the speed. Whereas when you're out on the highway, it tenses everything up and it makes things much more natural.
Sporty.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It has drive select where you have like three levels. It's the names of the levels are goofy. It's like comfort, auto, and dynamic. I mean, yeah. I get the comfort and dynamic as the two ends of the spectrum, but I thought it meant it was going to like customize itself to your driving situation. It's not. It's just everything's balanced instead. And so within that, and
I thought it was going to be like auto is when I just want to defer to the car, just get me home.
That's what I thought too. Auto. But it turns out no, it's just in between the two things. Like like comfort is so there's like eight different variables for each of these settings.
Oh,
where
God.
It's like brake feel, engine aggression, like gear shifts. Engine noise, it opens flaps in the exhaust system,
yep.
like so that it's got a better backflow, although for an injected car, that doesn't really matter. But it changes the sound of the engine as a result.
That's because they're all they're turbocharged. Mine's got that, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the BMW, don't they just pipe more music, more sound in when you
But they
change
do adjust
that?
The flaps, and but they also, in my car, they bung it through the speakers, too, to make you think.
Yeah. So they have, and then like, it's like there's a whole bunch of, you know, suspension, steering feel, all that stuff. So in addition to those three settings, there's an individual one where you can customize each of those items yourself into the three. Like, so let's say you want to go super sporty, but you don't want it to be loud. You could just turn the engine noise down, but have everything to like the sporty settings. And I haven't messed with these things. And of course it's got like, you know, the paddle shifting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You can switch over to driving wise. All those things seem to work well. There's a lot of things to figure out.
Well, so let me ask you a quick question before you continue. You've had the car, about 3 weeks now. If 100% is knowing everything, where everything is, and being able to set it how you want it, in terms of all this technology, after 3 weeks, how your percentage of knowledge of what your car can do and how it does it is at what? Like, do you feel like I am still I'm still in chapter one, or yeah, I've pretty much got it mastered?
Driving technology wise, I'm probably at 80 or 90% on this stuff because those are relatively straightforward.
I just sucked some Marmite from out of my tooth. Great. See, Nutella doesn't do that. Nutella is an instant hit. Marmite's with you forever. Sorry, continue.
So driving wise, it's those things are pretty good. Like there's a bunch of it has. Eight cameras and sensors around the edges of the car.
That was very cool.
So when you're parking or you're driving through something, it's beeping and telling you. And if you were about to hit something, it'll stop the car.
It's also got an aerial view of the cameras. The cameras
are set up in such a way that, like, you know, through the magic of computers, they can reconfigure it so you can see the top of the car, everything around you. So those things are pretty straightforward. There's a couple like little electronic settings that I haven't quite figured out how to. Like see different views and I'm very active now on the Audi World. I'm not actively reading. I don't.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
On the Audi World forum.
I'm only in one.
Where
forum.
Like every time you're like, I can't figure something out. It's just easier.
And that's
which,
not
which is
car.
A side note that the manual for the car is just garbage. Like it has some things that are not discussed at all. It has some things that are discussed that aren't.
But you
really
can
there.
But you can go into your car to get that. I even found out when I BMW, the manual's not very long. You just go into your car's computer to tell you how.
Well, that's
and it'll tell
so.
You
that,
how
so this
work.
Is where things start to fall down a little bit from my mind, and where I have less knowledge is what they call it, the MMI multimedia something or other infotainment. It's basically what they call the infotainment system. So it's both doing, you know, your radio options, which of course it has XM, SD cards, Bluetooth, all these sort of different versions of it. You can plug your phone in, and if you have Apple CarPlay, it then shows that stuff on the screen, or if you have Android Auto, it shows that stuff on the screen. Those are the parts where suddenly, like, it's basically a computer, but the the level of detail of what the heck is going on is really harder to follow. Like, once all those little ergonomic pieces have been very good in the sense that I figured out, okay, I push this switch, I get to this particular part or this version of the media or something like that, or push it twice and go, that part's pretty straightforward. It's when you start like digging into like configurations and things, and the Android Auto is not, I'll plug it in one time and one time it'll come up, another time it does. I think these are actually phone problems and not the car's problems.
Like, but the phone isn't up to this job.
Exactly. Right. Like, because it relies on soft Android Auto software on your phone as well as on the car. And it does. And there's a number of things where it starts to do a little bit of nannying stuff. Like, so if you plug your phone into a UBS cable and it's doing the Android Auto, you can't use your phone because it's saying, hey, you're in a car. We don't want you typing on your phone. It's like, you should do everything through our system on the car.
Okay.
Like, so for example, Waze is a GPS app that people know of, thing, right? Yeah. So, sure, Waze is on the screen, pretty darn good, and you can like do most of the things you can do. But for example, every time I go to work, I look on Waze, and there's a version of like, okay, check the different routes, because from here is like 18 different routes I can take to work, and then it can show a map of the different routes. So now I know which one I want to take. Well, that option is not on the phone, the version in the car. Like, it'll tell you different routes, but it won't show you a picture of them, so you can't entirely tell what route the car is taking you on.
Okay.
So now I'm like, okay, now I'm just annoyed now because I got to unplug the phone if I want to check this out and the like. But it's all these pieces where I'm, you know me, I'm like kind of fastidious about the my technology.
Yeah,
and I want my technology to open all the options for me. Let me choose what to do. I don't want the technology to
box
close
you in
the options
a little bit
on me, right?
Okay.
So these parts of it kind of bug me. You know, things like reading text. Like, I know Android, I haven't quite figured this part out. Android Auto has a thing where if you get a text, it would automatically, should automatically come up and say, hey, you have a new text. You want me to read it to you?
Yeah, Apple CarPlay is the same.
And then you can
thing,
do
yeah,
this stuff back. And I've done that. I've done that on the phone version of Android. I've done that in like a Toyota rental car where like the car itself had that feature. Those features are somewhere on this car, but I can't get it to quite work the way I want it to. And so it's those parts where I'm like sort of falling behind and getting a little bit frustrated.
I was once in a Volkswagen where it had the thing where it could read the text to you, and I ended up swearing and then sending my general swear
right.
back in a text to the person
yeah,
who happened to be a 13-year-old girl. Yeah. So I don't quite know.
So I want to rattle off a few other extra pieces here. So it has this interior LED lighting, these little strips of light.
That was very cool.
They normally come in white, right? You know, they light up. So they're just sort of illuminating the car, footwells
like,
and things.
It's like driving around on the Starship Enterprise.
You can change them to any number of 32 different colors. Like, there's a color wheel that you can switch to it. You can change them so that depending upon those drive selections dynamic, it'll be a different color. So you'll know, oh, I'm in sporty color because these things are red now, or they're green or whatever they are.
And what happens if I've had three beers? Why is my car in orange? What's going on? I shouldn't be behind the wheel.
Speaking of beers, you know, like, so it has a lot of auto driving related things.
Yeah.
It is not like, you know, full on drive you home and punch the things in, but it has, so intelligent cruise control has been around a while. So you got cruise control, but like it sees a car ahead of you, it will slow down on the highway and the like. It couples that with what they call lane assist, which you've turned that on at the same time, it will steer the car. You can have it's, if you don't turn on the turn signal, it'll make a little vibration if you're going across the thing, but it also will just steer the car for you if you want. You can't like let your hands completely off the wheel, but you have your
hands. So it is leading you.
Yeah. I mean, it like,
do you know what I mean? Because we're not talking about an autonomous car here.
No, well, they think they call it like level two in the sense that it requires oversight, but it will do that stuff as long as it's picking up what it's supposed to pick up. So it has a little, like when it can see the lane markers, it says it's green and it thing steers like it's totally, I've used it on the highway and as long as, you know, a regular highway, spot on, just drive you along there, like just rest your hand on the wheel and deal with that stuff. And there's a traffic version of that too, like if you're in stop and go traffic, it will see the lanes and will stop and go for you in traffic, called traffic assist. Apparently there's another Audi that's like bigger that has traffic, it's a different word than assist, but it does even more in this regard where you don't have to put your hands on things at all. I'm still sort of figuring out, but
does
like
it have the Uber
I had
radar
a, I had a dream Uber
what? The Uber radar where it flashes up that you're near an Uber, and then you can either avoid the Uber or wind down your window and hurl abuse at a bad driver. No. Oh, okay.
There's a vision that we all have where instead of having to take, like, you know, everybody talks about Ubers are ultimately going to be automatic, right? Like when the cars are fully automated, all the drivers at Uber are getting fired. And when you call a car, it's just going to show up automatic. You'll get in and it'll take you there.
Right now in London taxi cabs demonstrate against Uber. In about 10 years, Uber drivers are going to be demonstrating against the autonomous cars.
Right. So, we all vigilate. If you're going to do that, well, if you put that all in my own car, I can just go out to the restaurant, have three glasses of wine, and then just be like, car, take me home, you know?
Yeah.
And then I won't have to worry about it. We're very far from that. I can tell you that on my car. You know, this is what you realize. It's one thing to drive in lanes, but like stop signs, parking lots, these things are like near impossible. I've suddenly moved my day of automated cars out further
because I appreciate
that people, these do exist. Like, you know, and I think in certain towns they're testing fully automated
California
cars.
They are. Yeah.
But I think Pittsburgh.
UPS have been tested. I think it's UPS.
But the idea of navigating real
autonomous
life.
Delivery.
Also,
truck.
The other thing I realized, and this, you know, like when you drive around, people with Uber drivers and other people who are just relying on their GPS.
Oh, they're
and
a nightmare.
How they hesitate at these intersections.
Nightmare.
You're like, dude, just be a driver and do this. Well, realize that's what, you know, the automated stuff is going to be programmed to be cautious. And so if it ever runs into something where it's not clear, it's going to suddenly slow down and you're going to be yelling at empty cars, basically.
And I can't decide if that's a good or a bad thing. When I yell at other drivers with my mother, she goes, someone's going to shoot you one day. If I yelled at an autonomous car, I'm completely safe. But I don't know if I'm going to feel the same way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be a self for me.
Yeah, no, it won't. Because when you yell at somebody in another car, you're not even yelling. You're just yelling at the thing. You know,
I don't know. I don't know if it's as satisfying. Right. Oh, there's no driver. Oh, whereas an Uber driver,
I don't do a lot of yelling out of windows.
Oh,
I
do.
But if whenever I get upset at a driver, I don't expect that they're going to react. Like, I think about this sometimes when you want to get mad at somebody, you're like, well, they're not going to be because you ever go into a situation where clearly they're in the wrong and they know they're in the wrong. And if you're on that side, you go, oh, I got to make sure I don't do that. Getting yelled at by somebody doesn't enhance that experience. If anything, it makes you more defiant, right? So, like, I never think if I'm going to yell at somebody, like, I would get anything out of that in terms of result on their side. I might feel better because I yelled or got upset, but it doesn't do anything on the receiving side. It's not like the receiving people are like, oh, I thought I was doing fine, but this person yelled at me. A couple other things. So it has a thing where the cameras pick up speed limit signs and other major traffic signs and puts them on your screen. And it's got a heads-up display that projects, like, your speed.
That's not that new, though.
It has the GPS turns that are coming up next on that. And it has, and if like, so, like, if you pass a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit, it will put it right up there next to your thing because it sees the thing. It's amazing. Like, you'll be coming up on a change of speed limit, and you can see the sign there. And the cameras know right when you hit that sign, it will switch it over on your dashboard. And so now it knows you're supposed to be going a different
speed. I once had a rental car when I was in France. We rented a Toyota from Europe car. And it wasn't a Toyota that they had here. It was sort of a small SUV crossover type thing. Mm-hmm. And it had that built. This is a couple of years ago. And it had the constant changing of speed limits.
What's it doing with the cameras or just data?
I don't know. I don't know how it did it, but it was a great feature.
It's
still racked up all kinds of tickets, but still.
It's got
driver error.
I think I mentioned that it's got something called Audi Connect where it connects to the internet and it pulls.
Yeah, they've all got that.
Pulls down, like, it pulls down articles. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, if you wanted, you could have it read out articles to you and the weather and things like that.
Oh.
It has a Wi-Fi hotspot in the car through the Audi Connect, which is valid for 6 months. So, like, if somebody else is in the car and they don't want to use their data, they can actually use the Wi-Fi connection in the car.
But you'll have to pay for that after 6 months.
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what they charge on it, but it has the seats massage you.
Oh.
It has three different massage settings. And I think what it is really the lumbar support stuff. They're like, because it's the same set of switches and you can switch it to massage. So the things that normally would be like just, you know, you could adjust your lumbar support, they'll now do like a rolling massage or a kneading massage or thing. It's not like a vibrating thing. It's like literally like the things rolling up and down your back, which I'm looking forward to using that.
Vaguely, it's a play on the words autoerotic.
Yeah.
So I've got a question for you.
No, the virtual cockpit, by the way, the main dashboard, I started to talk about it. Like, oh, where the speedometers are.
Very cool.
That's a screen, right? And that's not unprecedented, but like you can have the speedometer and tachometer be little things, big things, a central thing. It'll show the whole GPS, like a big widescreen version of the GPS. It has Google Earth, so instead of GPS, like generic cartoon pictures, you can actually see the pictures of what you're above or in the roads or in things like that. And then that thing's got like 18 different configurations where you can scroll it around with one finger to like the stereo, the car, phone, all that sort of stuff.
Okay, so your car is a 2018. Mm-hmm. It's German. Yeah. Mine's a 2016. It's also German. Vaguely related price points. I would say that yours is probably the next step up from mine, but I'm not, I don't want to get involved in that. I find it interesting because I feel like my car is a bit of a throwback in that it's still, it's got some technology, but again, I've got three settings. That's it. I can, if I want to, I can be one of those guys who self-codes in. Yeah. That's like a big thing with it. Like you can buy a coder.
OBD11 is a big popular thing. It's you plug it in and you can like change the settings.
I do have a wheel, but I've got lots of buttons for my radio and I can still run the car pretty much without the wheel. My dials are real dials. It's still quite a tactile experience. I'm not a technology guy, so I feel like this car is as far as I want to go into my own car in terms of sort of, hey, technology is great, but you know something? I still want to drive the thing. Mm-hmm. That's how I approach it. I know you come at it at a slightly different place in terms of your relationship with technology, but I find it interesting. I feel like my car is the beginning of an end of an era, and with the long list of stuff you've just read off, your car is one of the first off the line for this is how it's going to be. And I think the point I'm making is within our conversation here, we've talked a lot about autonomous cars. I find it very interesting that you actually, right now, there are cars where you can do everything, yet apparently the car companies want to get to the stage where you don't do anything at all. I find that sort of an interesting thing. But my question for you, my question for you is, you're a technology guy. You're a month in and you're still only halfway through. Is there almost too much you can do with a thing? Because again, most of us are only in our car for at the most an hour and a half a day. Is there almost too much going on here?
Here's the thing, yes and no, right? So it's yes.
And you love all this.
Yeah.
For me, I'd be like, I've got to get out. I can't handle
it. It's yes in the sense that if you want to know everything it does and use everything it does, they could do a much better job. But it's not like a phone where the things are intuitive. Every car is a little different in terms of its dials and stuff and things like that. So that's why I appreciate the difficulty they deal with there. So in that sense, it's a little frustrating to get there. But what I also realize, and this feeds perfectly into what you said there, the ultimate point of the technology in the car is not that you would always use it all. You can be that person who uses it all, or you could be the person who uses none of it, right? So right now these things are options, but you could easily foresee a point in the future where, because the technology associated with this, you know, your phone, we talk about phones being expensive, but think about the amount of technology that goes in your phone in terms of locating you, in terms of motion detectors, sure, in terms of all these things for $500, right? Well, shoot, in a car price, You roll in this technology, and as long as they're not spending a bunch on taking care of that technology, and I'm guessing the platforms will start to converge in terms of people putting in a system that'll be similar. So now I could get a car. It should just come with that stuff. And if I want to use it, I can use it. If I don't want to use it, I don't use it. If I do use it, it might enhance my safety. There's a bunch of pluses. But at the end of the day, I can turn all that off. I mean, I don't have to use any lane assist. I can turn off the screens. I can, I don't have to pay attention to the cameras. I could just drive the car like a car.
Okay.
You know, like that doesn't matter other than the fact that I have to choose between comfort and auto or whatever the heck it is. I could just put it in one of those settings and keep it in that setting. I could switch it over to being manual, like I'm driving like a manual car. So I think that's what I'm realizing looking at it is the point isn't like if you only know 80% of it, that's fine because it's only the amount you want to use, right? Okay. Like I know the different thing. If I want to use an extra part, like that's what I found myself. But a couple of times I've been like, well, I don't really know how this works. Maybe I should check. And I'm like, do I care? I mean, like, do I really need that part of it? And if I don't need that part, I'm not going to bother spending a bunch of time learning it because it's not an important part to me, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it all, I mean, you know, I'm guilty of being a bit of a throwback about it all. In that I've often said this. I want to get in the car and feel like I'm a Spitfire pilot.
Yeah, but
and I don't want to get in my car and feel like I'm a guest. And I'm not suggesting that's the case here, but just I know for me personally, if I was sitting in your seat today with that pad in front of me, I'd almost get to the stage where I'd be almost. And it's my own fault because I have a very short attention span for learning this stuff. I'm a late adopter. Everyone heard me say that before. I'd almost have a panic attack getting in my car.
I don't know. I mean, like, listen, think about how you use your phone and your computer, right? I don't do much with it.
That's exactly. The trouble. I don't. That's who I am.
But that's the point. But,
oh, so I'm a fault.
No, what you're telling me? No, that's the point. Is that's what you would do. I don't think it'd be daunting. It'd be like you buy an iPhone and, I mean, you barely have even figured out. I don't even know if you use iTunes.
No, my
because
phone,
you,
no.
You listen to our own podcast on your computer at work, right? Most time, or other podcasts.
No, but I have downloaded it onto my phone because I'm funny about why I don't want to take up my storage.
Yeah.
So again, I have a whole different set of issues.
Yeah, but meanwhile, we've got a new version of, as you say, GarageBand.
Yeah.
You know, doing our recording.
It's GarageBand, not GarageBand.
Right. Well, it's GarageBand in America.
Garagely, the great line from Pineapple Express.
Anyway, the
user for use an assumed name, Garagely. Have you ever seen that scene? Seth Rogen is completely high, and he's at the house with Elon Musk's girlfriend. The blonde, his girlfriend in Pineapple Express, is in real life the one that beat up Johnny Depp.
Isn't she supposed to be a teenager in the movie?
Well, yeah, because the movie's like 8 or 9 years old now.
Okay.
And she was with Elon Musk. See, it all comes together. But anyway, he's in there, and I think it's Ed, what's his name, is the dad.
Ed Begley Jr.
And anyway, yeah. Great
so,
line.
But meanwhile, you know how to work. This is one of the most, I mean, we're really getting into the broad things. The fact that when we did this podcast, because you were the one who dealt with the technology stuff,
yeah.
I didn't have time to figure that stuff out. You've got the soundboard.
Yeah.
So like you use the amount of technology you want to use. Like so you'd be the same thing in a car. Like if you said, you know what? I don't care about like auto driving things, but I do like the fact that I can park with cameras.
But
you
would
learn how to
thing.
Use the cameras.
Because you know, this is me now, because you know I'm a bit of a mingebag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where it's now related.
Right.
If I had your car with all that technology and I wasn't using it, at some point I would feel like I'm not getting anything out of the car.
Well, yeah, you could
and I would also feel, ooh, they're ripping me off because they charge me for all this crap
but you
that
know what
I
else?
Don't use.
You know what else? You could become a sport racer of your car. You could go get racing slicks, and you could drive every weekend at Summit Point Raceway. And
yeah.
You don't do that either, right?
No,
I mean,
that's
true. You've done some fast driving, but you don't. That's not your regular thing. Cars have a very wide range of capacity. I mean, unless you get like a little tiny economy car that really is only good for getting you to and from work. You know, don't even want to go on the highway. You want to do that. You know, that you just want to keep it simple and keep it cheap. As soon as you get a car with extra features and extra – like technology or not – I mean, and in fact, it is technology underpinning your car being a sporty car.
Well, here's the interesting thing now. Maybe we're going to get to the stage where – to what you've just said. People can go out there and they can buy the car that they want depending on what they want to do with it and who they are. But in a strange way, maybe we're getting to the stage where cars are actually all the same. You buy it.
Yeah.
And then you make it be what you want it right. to be, which is slightly different from
which would
hey,
be ideal. That's what I would like. I mean, I want to be able to make the thing do what I want it to do, and that's part of the frustration getting to the point where I figured everything out enough to have it do what I want.
Is it fair to say it was worth the money? And so to sort of get to the end here of our technological discussion, because it's got so much, do you feel like, wow, I paid and I got? Like, does all this technology? Because again, it's an Audi. It's a German import car. It's a luxury sedan. So at that moment, in the same way that I bought a BMW, there is a certain sort of price range that we're in. We're not sitting there going out buying a Ford Festiva, right? So my question to you is, do you sit there and go, I got all this technology and yeah, okay, I get why it costs what it costs. Or is it some moment are you still like, I've paid this amount of money for this well-engineered, and I mean that in a very tactile solid sense product, or is the technology? Is it like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm getting. I don't know if I'm expressing.
No, you are clear. I'm trying to figure out the answer is that human psychology is unable to figure out this out. We buy things all the time. Every economist or people would like to think that there is a value exchange for pleasure, enjoyment, and the like, but we buy different products and things with just wildly different expectations of
okay.
satisfaction, right? Like just think about the times that you will buy one thing versus another thing because something's $5 cheaper. And yet, you go to a nice par with craft beers, and you'll drop $10 on a beer. That does not give you the same value of like the effort of doing this.
No,
so,
you're right.
So when it comes to something, so this, you know, just to extrapolate to this sort of product, is it worth? Like, I don't feel like. Oh, bad for spending the money on certain things associated with a car because, gosh, I spent a ton of time in that car. Like sometimes I do that equation where you're like, okay, what do I spend my life doing?
Because you know something, I'm actually going to answer your question for you, and it's not my car.
Yeah,
I think you've got a great deal because I can't imagine. And again, this is the interesting thing about cars. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you are paying for size and structure. I can't imagine. I know this is an extreme
example. The underlying car itself, like I don't even blink twice.
No, but what
about,
I mean
like,
is, if I dropped $100,000 on a car,
which, to be clear, these cars are not anywhere near.
I dropped $100,000 on a car, I'm not sure I'm sitting there expecting anything else technological that you don't have. What I would be expecting is bigger, smoother ride, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Or like I've got a BMW, but a Porsche type thing. Do you know what I mean? And so I guess. In a strange way, in terms of, because the whole point of this discussion was the technology that comes with the cars, you've got a great deal. Because
if any of the pricing options you might feel regret about, it's that each of these things come with packages where they come a bunch. Like none of the, you don't do a la carte, like, oh, I'd like the lane assist, but not the so and so. You pay for a package that has this stuff, and I'd have to look back at it. But there's none of it that I would
say.
But
you're not sitting there going, wow, I wish I had a such and such. Technologically speaking, right. That's what I mean now. In terms of the extra stuff, the tech, you're not sitting there going,
like
"Oh,
it,
wow."
I would like it to drive me home after dinner, five beers or three beers or something like that. But you know,
these cars, they can think, but they can't think for you.
I imagine the price on that would be a little bit more.
All right, so brand new car, very happy.
Yeah,
I think that's our show.
Yeah.
You made a great. We finished there on a great philosophical thing.
Yeah, no, it's a big thing. There's like you can look up. There's all kinds of studies, of recent studies about. How people make choices to spend money and like a lot of theories that have been around for years that it's like, oh, you basically take $5 and you say, well, $5 give me this much pleasure. Like what's the best way to seek satisfaction and pleasure out of your $5 or what would be best for your benefit? But just not the way people's minds work. Like we do everything based on like comparables. Like when you buy food, you'll compare the price of food, but you don't compare the prices of food to what it costs to buy a mattress. You know, like these things just don't—they don't exchange that way.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. Yeah. What are you doing the rest of the day? Sitting in my garage working out my car.
I've got to go get the tags. I'm going to go fill up a couple of growlers of beer for the Super Bowl tomorrow.
For the Super Bowl, yeah. Will anyone kneel during the Super Bowl? I don't know. Find out when you read the Wall Street Journal.
We don't do our prop bets, but
we'll do that. Yeah. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zef.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zef on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.